You consume it daily. You go through more than you probably realize. You are literally made of it. But how much do you really know about water? Join me, Lake Storywater, and my droid, H2O, as we travel in search of the science behind water and water-related concepts. This is Story of Water. Can you name all of the Great Lakes? Here's a hint. The names of the Great Lakes can be remembered with the acronym HOMES.
Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior.
The Great Lakes have shores in 8 states. Can you name the states?
They are Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, and also the Canadian province of Ontario.
In this multi-part series, we're exploring the past, present, and future of the Great Lakes. This episode focuses on the recent past, as well as the present state of the Great Lakes.
What makes the Great Lakes so important?
Almost 10% of the U.S. population and 32% of the Canadian population lives within the Great Lakes watershed. A watershed is an area of land where any rain that falls is channeled to the same location. The Great Lakes watershed is, then, all of the land and the lakes themselves on which any water that flows will end up flowing to one of the Great Lakes. There are more than 3,500 species of animals and plants in the watershed, including 170 fish species alone. The people, animals, and plants in the watershed all depend on the water the Great Lakes provide. About 40 million people in the U.S. and Canada get drinking water from the Great Lakes. Farms use water from the lakes to irrigate crops such as corn and soybeans and provide water for cows. In turn, these crops and dairy products help feed the countries that border the lakes. Another food product that comes from the lake is fish. Commercial fishermen catch about 100 million pounds of fish each year in the lakes. The lakes provide recreational opportunities from fishing to swimming to boating. Some cities are known for their lakefronts, others for their harbors and marinas, while still other areas offer sandy beaches. These features bring in tourists to towns and cities along the lakes, and tourists spend about $16 billion annually on water-related recreation around the Great Lakes. The lakes allow for efficient shipping of goods between the Midwest and the Atlantic Ocean. More than 200 million tons of cargo are moved through the Great Lakes each year, as many manufacturing industries are located along the lakes.
Don't the lakes all have different elevations?
That's true. Moving cargo through all 5 lakes used to be impossible because of the difference in elevation. Thanks to some engineering marvels, however, this is no longer a problem. Enabling travel between Lake Superior and Lakes Huron and Michigan is the Sioux Locks. The Sioux Locks opened in 1855.
How does a lock work?
Think of a lock as a giant box with swinging gates on each end. A ship enters the lock, and the gates close on both ends of the lock. Then the water level in the lock will rise if the ship is going to Lake Superior, or the water level lowers if the ship is going to Huron. About 22 million gallons of water either fills or leaves the lock each time it is used. Once the water level reaches the same level as the lake the ship is heading to, the gates open and the ship leaves. About 10,000 ships use the Sioux Locks each year. Niagara Falls causes a major problem between Lakes Erie and Ontario. 2 solutions were constructed in the 1820s. The first is the Erie Canal. It was built to connect the Great Lakes to the Atlantic Ocean by skipping Lake Ontario. It runs through New York east from Lake Erie to the Hudson River, which eventually empties into the Atlantic Ocean in New York Harbor. It is 363 miles long and opened in 1825. This canal is primarily used by recreational boaters now. The second is the Welland Canal. It was dug west of Niagara Falls in Canada to go around the falls. It opened in 1829. It consists of 8 locks that allow ships to bypass Niagara Falls. This canal is more for cargo ships. About 3,000 ships use the 27-mile-long canal annually. Another engineering marvel on the Great Lakes is the Mackinac Bridge. The Mighty Mack, as it is known, is a 5-mile-long suspension bridge that crosses the Straits of Mackinac between Lake Michigan and Lake Huron. It was built in order to connect the two peninsulas of Michigan. Construction began in 1954 and was completed in 1957. It is the longest suspension bridge between anchorages in the Western Hemisphere. The road sits 200 feet above the water at the bridge's midpoint, and its two towers rise 552 feet above the water. The total weight of the bridge is over 1 million tons. It takes 7 years to repaint the entire Mighty Mack, which must be done in order to prevent corrosion.
I saw this on an episode of Dirty Jobs when host Mike Rowe joined a painting crew on the bridge.
Over 11,000 vehicles cross the bridge each day, although for some people, the crossing brings out their Jephyrophobia, or fear of crossing bridges. This may stem from the design of the bridge. The center two lanes are open grid to reduce wind resistance. This means that as you drive over, you can actually see down into the water. I will admit it is a little nerve-wracking driving in these two lanes, but if you stay in the right lane, it may calm your nerves. Centuries of waves crashing into and depositing sediments onto the shorelines has created numerous natural wonders along the lakes. Located on the southern shore of Lake Superior, on Michigan's Upper Peninsula, is Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. The Pictured Rocks are colorful sandstone cliffs that reach as high as 200 feet and extend for 15 miles. They get their color from various minerals found in the rock. Iron appears red and orange, copper appears blue and green, manganese appears brown and black, and limonite appears white. In addition to the cliffs, the Pictured Rocks contain waterfalls, arches, caves, and other unique rock formations. The best way to view the Pictured Rocks is from the water, taking a boat tour, or paddling a sea kayak. I saw the Pictured Rocks via sea kayak on a wavy, chilly day in May. I kayaked along 2 miles of the Pictured Rocks, and despite the effort of paddling against the waves and the chilly spray of Lake Superior, the amazing views were well worth it. Staying on Lake Superior's southern shore, but now off Wisconsin's coast, are the Apostle Islands. The Apostle Islands National Lakeshore consists of 21 islands in a 720-square-mile area. The islands are home to 8 historic lighthouses, sandy beaches, impressive rock formations, and probably the biggest draw, intricate sea caves. As in the Pictured Rocks, the best views are from the water, either on a boat tour or sea kayak. I visited the Romans Point Sea Caves on a warm July day. This was a much easier paddle than the Pictured Rocks, as it was only a mile from the beach to the caves. It was another breathtaking experience to paddle into some caves and to feel the temperature drop. I will share more of my adventures on Lake Superior in our next episode, but for now, let's move on. Lake Michigan has some natural wonders of its own. On the eastern shore, on Michigan's Lower Peninsula, are many wind-swept dunes. Probably the most well-known are the Sleeping Bear Dunes. Stretching for 35 miles, the Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore contains dunes that reach 450 feet high. They are the largest freshwater dune system in the world. It is a unique experience to run up and down these massive dunes, almost otherworldly. Of course, this list wouldn't be complete without mentioning Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls is located on the Niagara River, which connects Lake Erie to Lake Ontario. It also forms the border between the U.S. and Canada. Niagara Falls actually consists of three waterfalls: American Falls, Bridal Veil Falls, and the largest, Horseshoe Falls. Horseshoe Falls is about 2,600 feet wide with a 187 foot drop. Niagara Falls is the largest waterfall by volume in North America, as 600,000 gallons of water go over the falls every second.
Fact, that's enough water to fill 15,000 bathtubs every second.
The best view of the falls is on the Canadian side, so make sure to bring your passport if you're coming from the U.S. With all of the different uses of water, there are numerous issues that affect the health of the Great Lakes watershed. Here are just a few examples. The destruction of coastal habitats. This has been going on since the first Europeans settled along the lakes in the 17th century. Man changed the natural habitats to conform to his needs. Wetlands were filled in to create farmland. Rivers blocked by dams prevented fish from reaching spawning grounds. Harbors created through dredging altered shorelines. Natural coastal habitats act as a protective barrier from the constant onslaught of waves and wind on the shoreline. When that protective barrier is altered or even removed, that protection is lost, and the waves and wind degrade the area even more through erosion. Combine that with another more recent issue of rising lake water levels, and you have an even more devastating effect. On the Lake Michigan coast, homes built near the shoreline many years ago are dangerously close to the edge of the shoreline due to erosion, and in fact, some homes actually crumbled into the lake in 2020. The polluting of the lakes. As more people populate the region, more pollution is produced. Since only about 1% of all the water in the Great Lakes watershed gets replaced with new water each year, pollution has the tendency to build up and remain in the lakes. Harmful chemicals such as mercury can build up in the tissues of fish that we eat. That's why it is advised to limit consumption of fish that reach a certain size, because they may have a dangerous level of mercury in them. Common sources of pollution include industrial and mining waste, sewage, and agricultural runoff such as fertilizers and pesticides. The nitrogen and phosphorus in fertilizers cause a major accumulation of algae known as an algal bloom. These algal blooms lead to the death of aquatic organisms by blocking sunlight from underwater plants and using up the oxygen that fish need. Algal blooms can also make the water unsafe to drink. Algal blooms in Lake Erie have actually been so large they have been photographed from space. The changing climate. With global temperatures rising, the lakes are not immune. Rising lake temperatures have the devastating effect of killing some organisms that can only survive at certain cooler temperatures. Warmer water holds less dissolved oxygen than cooler water, so some fish die from not getting enough oxygen in warmer water. Rising temperatures also mean less ice formation in the winter. This creates a vicious circle of warming. Less ice means more sunlight is absorbed and the water heats even more, meaning it will take longer for the lake to cool enough for ice to form the following year. Warming lakes can also lead to more favorable conditions for algal blooms, with an increase in more intense storms that lead to more surface runoff of fertilizers. Warming lakes also create more favorable conditions for invasive species. Invasive species are organisms that are introduced to an area that they don't naturally belong to. Invasive species tend to compete with native species for food and habitat. Unfortunately, this causes some species to go extinct in the Great Lakes.
Let's talk about invasive species in another episode.
Great idea! There is so much to know about invasive species. Let's devote an entire future episode to that topic. Habitat destruction, pollution, climate change, and invasive species all contribute to a loss of biodiversity, or the variety of life in a certain area. A healthy ecosystem requires biodiversity, and without it, the water quality is greatly reduced. In order to help protect the Great Lakes, the U.S. and Canada established the International Joint Commission in 1909. The IJC's role is to improve water quality and regulate water usage by approving projects that affect the waters of the Great Lakes, investigating issues, and recommending solutions. One of the issues that has been brought up recently is that of water rights.
Who has rights to the water of the Great Lakes?
According to the Great Lakes Compact of 2008, diversions of water outside of the Great Lakes watershed is not allowed, with a few exceptions. What constitutes being in the watershed? If part of your county is in it, does that mean the whole county has access? What about if your state is in it? Can the whole state access it then? The first question was put to the test when Waukesha, a city west of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, wanted to access water from Lake Michigan. While the city itself is not in the watershed, a small part of its county is in the watershed. It took 6 years to decide that the city was allowed to access the water. As climate change continues to be a problem, more disputes similar to this are likely. That brings us to the end of this second episode on the Great Lakes. Join us next time as we continue our exploration of the Great Lakes.
Goodbye.
Thanks for joining us on Story of Water. If you liked what you heard, why not subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast provider? Let your friends and family know about it as well. Connect with us and listen directly at www.story-of-water.com. Check out the blog or email us feedback. If you really enjoyed the show, become a Patreon supporter. Just click the donate button on our website. Remember, stay hydrated. See you next time on Story of Water.